You are tuned in to the Mark Order Podcast. Join the Mark Order.
Well, Kate, I don't know where to cut it. It is Wednesday night, so I'm doing a hard cut of the music. It is the Mark Order Podcast. It is me, Ryan, joined as always by my co-host, Joe. How are you, Joe?
Not always, but I'm making good effort. I'm good. I'm here. There's no thunderstorm to knock out my internet. So yeah, hopefully I didn't miss too much last week.
Just a little bit of this, a little bit of that. For those thinking that because I'm talking, it means Kate's not going to be on tonight. She is. She's in the process of restarting her and updating her computer. And she probably will pop on any minute, but she figured let's get started because, you know, I called this, this is her overrun when she does her last minute setup that prevents her from being on air. You know, she only had an extra half hour because apparently AEW doesn't follow a clock.
Well, no, AEW ended with the women's match as the run, the overrun, and it's only fitting that we have the overrun with Kate. So Kate and AEW booking are, you know, handshake.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I guess they both just really don't have good time management. I guess that's what it comes down to, Joe. I mean,
I'm not saying that. That's Ryan hating on women.
No, just Kate. Very specific. It's not a general. It's a very specific hatred. You know, I mean, again, well, I'm going to start with that tonight before we get into anything else. I could check on how you're doing. Actually, let me start. How you doing? Anything new?
Not much, other than over the weekend I went down to Kansas City and got a nice little sunburn at the World Cup Fan Fest.
What is that?
It was like their, you know, since Kansas City was one of the host sites for, you know, the World Cup games, they had an area for Fan Fest, which is like a big open area that's free for people to go to and check out. And there's a couple of concerts, there's watch parties, vendors, you know. So I got to see the All-American Rejects, I guess, for free.
Well, you should have kept that your dirty little secret.
Well done. I missed you, Ryan.
It took me a second to remember what songs they sang. That's actually sounds like a good time. I mean,
what's your deal?
Not much at all. Wait, did you go down pre or post United States getting eliminated?
Post. Yeah.
Did that hurt the event at all?
No. I mean, there's still 20,000 people down there at the Fan Fest.
Okay.
And they were hosting what, Argentina and, oh my gosh, I'm blanking on who, Switzerland. They play Switzerland. So,
yeah, Argentina is looking like they're a team of destiny right now.
I know. So that's what I've been doing. Going all in on this World Cup stuff.
Fair enough. I do want to appreciate Big G's pun of you should move along. And I'll say hi to chat. Hi, Big G. Hi, Scott. Hi, Matthew Hooks. Hi, Pieces. Anyone else? I don't think I missed anyone. Nope. So again, Kate will be here in a minute. And I don't watch like Premier League soccer or anything. There's too many sports over here. But I do like the World Cup. I won't lie. I do enjoy the World Cup. I didn't think I did until I realized I watched games a lot. So I must.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. World Cup, you know, kind of like the Olympic, like when the Olympics are on and there are national teams facing each other. They're just something I can appreciate when, you know, regardless of what's going on in countries, that like, people rally and get behind one team. Like, you know, our country is the way it is, but when we have the U.S. men's national team trying to make a historic run, we're all fans of one thing, And it's kind of a nice thing to do every now and then.
Are you saying that our country can be divided at times? Because I don't believe it.
No, I would never think we're bipartisan.
I actually, truthfully, to the day, whatever, I don't even think we're as bad as it seems. I mean, that's actually one thing that the World Cup did, is all these people traveling America being like, everyone's so friendly and nice. It's like, yeah. Online sucks.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. People. We're different.
We got done watching the miniseries on Netflix, The American Experiment.
Oh, I watched it.
Yeah.
It was different than I expected.
It was interesting to hear some of the different people help tell the story.
Yeah, I'm not sure how I felt about them using so many politicians in the series. I get it wasn't like a pure history documentary, so that's how they got away with it. I tend to like my history documentaries with historians.
What do you know about history?
Not a thing. Yeah. But the only reason I even care is because you could hear them trying to put like their opinions on things throughout. Yeah. And that always annoys me because it's like, that's not why I'm watching this. You know, I'm watching this for history, but I watched it. It was not bad. Yeah. Ken Burns did a good one on the American Revolution. It's a lot of good stuff out there. Scott believes Argentina is on the take. No, the refs might be, but not Argentina itself. Listen, right now, to me in the World Cup, England is like, actually, this is a good example, even though it just ended. England was like the Knicks for so many years. They keep thinking this year will be their year, and it just never happens. Like, it happened a long time ago. And from then, and so it's kind of funny to me when they lose.
Well, to be fair, there's a long period of time, like the last 15 years, I don't think the Knicks fans thought this was going to be our year.
I know, but still, there was just like...
But they have all the resources and all the...
Like, yeah.
There's no reason why it can't be.
Big G has a good one, the Cowboys. Cowboys is a very good comparison.
Mm-hmm.
Except the Cowboys won a little more recently than England had won the World Cup, but I believe so, I think...
For me, locally, I'd be like believing in Nebraska football again.
Yeah. I mean, England hasn't won the World Cup since 1966. But yeah, Cowboys are delusional every year. Absolutely. They think every year is their year, and they just keep doing the same thing. Scott, I never said FIFA has done anything wrong. I'm saying the refs, they're not FIFA. FIFA is a great organization. It's never once done something shady.
FIFA and IOC right there together.
I mean, FIFA might be one of the most corrupt organizations. But no country wants to pull out of it because you can make it work for you.
Well, you never pull out.
Never. But, you know, you got this corrupt organization and you're like, you know what? I can work with that. And that's at least my opinion. I don't know enough. Maybe somebody will correct me, but that's always the vibe I got. Was like, yeah.
Is there any news of AEW stuff we should be talking about?
I don't think so, unless the chat has something. I want to say hi to War Hero, Laron Ford, Lord Kev. But yeah, I don't. I was looking through. Nothing came across my feed this week, but it's been one of those weeks. Taylor Cannon, hello. I do want to say, this is where I'm starting now. I am not amused at this overrun.
No.
And I enjoyed Dynamite. It was a fun, good old-fashioned Dynamite. But it's like a half-hour overrun. At some point in time, just say it's a 2.5-hour Dynamite.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they were legitimately pretty much, they were like 5 minutes short of 10:30. Like, at this point, go the extra 5 minutes and just book out for 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
The overrun is I get, I think the network probably likes it because it bleeds in weird and it keeps people from like timing things. You know, exactly. But I don't know. I mean,
it wasn't necessary for this week. And I think you're right. I feel like the last few overruns have all been around this 20, 25 minute mark. And they used to, I feel like they used to be just, you know, 10 minutes or 13 minutes. Now, yeah, it's becoming consistent.
I think like a 5 minute overrun is acceptable.
Yeah, that's like what I would consider an overrun. This is, yeah, beyond an overrun. This is just, like you said, just regular programming.
Yeah, I mean, this is now, you know, you're 2.5 hours into, like, at that point, like, Warriors Yang start 7:30. Like, I don't think you need, I get what they're saying. Like, if you want to end at 10, but, or we're doing 8 to 10:30. Okay.
I know. There are things in the show that we could have cut or trimmed to make it fit.
So, like Laurent saying, they did not need to go to commercial during the main event. Absolutely. And there was some stuff that could have been on Collision. 100%. I can't argue any of that. I mean, I personally would make sure that the Painmaker segment got more time.
As you do, because you're a big Jericho stan.
I would have wanted at least a half hour of just that. That could have been the entire overrun. We'll start, you know, because Kate's not here, we're going to be spicy tonight until she shows up and then gets, you know, whenever she shows up. She hasn't texted us, so I assume it's still running smoothly. Smoothly? That's not a word. What the hell was I? I think I was confused. Swimmingly and smoothly.
You fail English? That's impossible.
Yikes. But the one negative I'm seeing in our chat, and I was seeing all over social media tonight, was actually, before you get that, War Hero has a good point. Maybe they want to do 3 hours, but are hesitant because WWE does it and they don't want the blowback. I don't think they want to do 3 hours. I think they like the freedom of going long when they want to go long and short when they can go short, because fans, one, would, you're right, would absolutely yell at them for 3 hours. And two, you don't want to box yourself into that corner where you're now required to do it. It's one thing to say like, oh, we have a long one tonight. And the network's like, yay. Yeah. And, you know.
So you prefer long or short? Short ones or long ones, Ryan?
Well, really.
Part of the night.
You know, I take them all.
That's fair.
A1LT. But the thing I want to start with that, again, seems to be getting everyone upset, the one segment they didn't like, is that we are getting a Jericho Ciampa rematch. And Jericho, I mean, I saw it coming the minute he was silhouetted, was saying like, you know, Ciampa, you hurt me. You like to cause pain. Well, I'm bringing the pain maker. And it's like, that gimmick, you know, I'm a Jericho fan, but that gimmick worked when he first started doing it, because he had never done anything like that. Like, he'd always, like, that was his first attempt to be like, I'm going to be a very violent guy. So I think people bought into it because it's like, oh, we've never seen Jericho be very violent. This is his first time of like, this is what I'm going to be. And it was the whole New Japan thing. Like, there was just this whole like different at like, now it's just, it looks cheesy and everyone's agreeing. Why do we have to have Ciampa versus Jericho again? Like, this is the one knock on Jericho. And I'm, as much as I'm a Jericho fan, I agree. His feuds don't die.
No.
Like,
he'll probably get the win. Yeah, the Painmaker gimmick didn't work for me when he did it in New Japan either. It felt silly to me. It felt too forced, and it feels a little bit more like Jericho playing theater kid dress up. So it's hard for me to take him seriously when he's the Painmaker. And I feel like, I feel like it's a little bit more serious now. I think he switched up the hat, so it's a little less goofy. I think the hat's better than the fedora.
I would have went smaller. Smaller or much, much bigger?
The hat was the only takeaway I had from that little promo.
I would have went.
It looked like
I would have went
Julio's hat. That's what it reminded me of.
Yeah, that works. I mean, 1LT is a big fan of the tiny hat, apparently. I think I would have, like I said, very tiny or very big would be funnier. But it's just like
long, short, tiny, big. Who knows? Who do you want?
Yeah, I don't know. Like my thing, I don't know how to say this. Like, what is the best case scenario for this? Jericho, Ciampa wins and has now just beaten Jericho again. And we're like, okay, congrats. You have a, you know, how do I say this? You're at the same spot, or Jericho wins. And this is all for naught for Ciampa. Like, he got nothing out of it. Like, that's what is the win in this? Jericho does not need to win this feud. Do we get Ciampa just actually using a screwdriver on electric screwdriver now on Ciampa? Like, I mean, on Jericho, is that what we're going to get? I don't know.
All this hat talk. Now I'm thinking about the old Norm MacDonald SNL skit, you know, with Celebrity Jeopardy where he's wearing the big hat.
Yes, that's a great one. My, I don't care. Because Kate's still not here. My favorite, Norm MacDonald's sketch forever was the one where he's in a gang, the Cobras. And everyone else is in basically a West Side Story singing, and he's the normal guy. So as he starts singing, he's like, what the hell is going on? And how did you learn to do this so quickly? I just, that one always made me laugh because he's so good at playing that, like, that straight man to the comedy. He's very good at it. Norm MacDonald was so funny. I really thought Kate would be here by now. I'm glad we didn't wait for her. Jesus.
Well, you said she didn't be here, so you probably jinxed her, so she probably won't be here now.
So, all right, I guess we'll go into the episode. The show started with Adam Copeland and Christian Cage versus Death Riders feature, which are Daniel Garcia and Wheeler Yuta at this point. It is a fun match. I mean, you have the veterans going against the younger guys, and I think they told that story well. The younger guys seemed to have the more energy. They were, you know, trying to wear the champs down. But at the end, in the end, champs are the champs for a reason. And they won because Copeland did a spear on Yuta. And then after the match, you have the dogs and the Death Rider, Claudio, I guess not the entire Death Riders. Claudio come down, they start beating up on the champs. But then the Bang Bang Gang makes a save, and Switchblade comes down and grabs the Shillelagh from Finley. And then you have like a moment where Switchblade and Christian are like staring at each other because they had bad blood in the past. So there's a couple things here. First, hi Jesse, since Kate's not here, I can say hi. The minute she walks in, I can't. If it ever happens. And then the second thing is the match is what it is. I mean, if you have comments before I get to my point, do you have any comments on the match? I just think it was an average match at best.
It was a Adam Copeland style paced match. I felt like it's what we see usually from them. I think you hit the nail on the head with, you know, I had more described as, you know, youth and speed versus experience and shortcuts. Because I feel like that's kind of how it set up for Copeland and Cage to win. It was a fine match. Other than that, my other notes were, I like the fact that the young guys were wearing trunks and the old guys were wearing pants.
I actually did appreciate that too. Old men wear pants. There is something in wrestling when you cross a certain age. Now, granted, Christian and Copeland always wore pants, but there is something you said when you cross a certain age in wrestling, you tend to go to pants. Unless you're Ric Flair and you just always wear your undies and you look weird in your undies at a certain age. But here's my issue with this. And we don't need to address it so much later on, but it plays into the Osprey stuff later, which is normally when a group is a tweener group, it's not so split between they'll do something dastardly and something good, like in the same night. And the Death Riders right now are 100% splitting that line. You know, you have
for now.
In one. What was that?
For now.
For now. But I'm just saying, like, you have Wheeler and Garcia and then Claudio being absolutely the heels in this. After the match with the dogs, there's a beatdown. They're fighting the fan favorite Copeland Cage. They're fighting the fan favorites, the Bang Bang Gang, which are so over. And then later in the show, when Ospreay and Omega are outnumbered, here comes Claudio with Moxley, and then suddenly the Bang Bang Gang's helping the baby faces. Now, in some respects, I like this because it's people are complex and this is a complex, but I guess I'm almost going to be hypocritical in the sense that I'm saying I kind of like how they're being complex, but they do seem almost. Let me put it this way. It does feel like there's almost two stories going on with them, like two separate groups. There's the Osprey story with the Death Riders, and then there's just the normal Death Rider stuff going over on the side.
I think where the troubling, the difficult part for us is that our brains are wired because we watch wrestling long enough that, like, we need that kind of fine line of, you know, heel, face, and then, yeah, there are tweeners. But tweeners are usually still pretty, like, they stay on one side for a while. They don't really do two things at the same time. So I think it's fun to watch, but it's just kind of, it's hard to make logical sense sometimes from what we're used to.
Yeah, I guess that's like, I'm contradicting myself. I understand that there's people are nuanced and you could be good guy, but I guess they're just so overt in their actions. Like, they're overtly helping the baby face, but then they're doing group beatdowns.
Or, you know what would be interesting? It would have been like if maybe only part of the Death Ride, like a couple of them were hanging out with the dogs, while the other part, like some other ones, other members were helping back up, you know, Will. I think that would be more interesting of, like, you know, almost teasing that dissension again of, like, some of the members of the Death Riders lean a little bit more heel, but some other members lean a little bit more face.
Yeah. Like, I mean, maybe I just got to untrain myself from my, you know, my typical wrestling brain where I need things to be, you know, you're either a good guy or you're a bad guy. It just feels like, you know what it is? I think I just got it. It's not so much that I hate the complex nature of, like, one moment they're acting like good guys and one moment they're acting like bad guys. It's that because they consistently act like bad guys and then just do some good guy stuff on the side, I'm constantly waiting for them to betray Ospreay.
Yes.
That's what it is. Like, I'm caught because
they're self-serving.
Yeah, and I'm just constantly waiting for that moment of, like, this was never really about you.
Yes, and that's, I have that note later on tonight.
You know, like when LT's saying Death Riders are just loyal, but are they loyal to Ospreay? Like,
themselves.
And they're not loyal.
Yeah.
And WWE, I don't know what that is. MUTJT, Death Riders are heels, like saying Mox. At some point, you just have to stop pretending to be who you're not. Like, there is that. Like, what? They act like heels so much that at some point, I'm just expecting them to attack Ospreay.
Yeah.
And
yep. My thought is they'll help Ospreay win the title, and then they will help, then they will work to get off him so Mox can have it again.
Yeah. You know, they're just, they're I know one LTV, like they gave Ospreay a Death Rider patch. He's a death. I don't believe him. I just don't. It doesn't feel like
he was one of the biggest threats to them. So what they do, they find a way to befriend him and bring him in. And
they'll take him out at their leisure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's why, because the split, I wouldn't wait for it as much if they weren't being bad guys elsewhere. Like, it's very clear, like they're not good guys.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to go straight into that part of the show with Ospreay and Kenny?
You say that again?
You want to go straight into that?
Yeah, let's just go. So Kenny comes out, he's champ. The Young Bucks come out with him. They present him the new old belt. And I say new old because obviously the Triple B was the belt that Kenny was holding, but then one LT doesn't want to accept that Death Riders might be evil, forgetting about Brian Danielson completely. So they present Kenny the new belt and kind of like, hey, you're back. We're happy to see you. We're glad you're at the top of your game again. You're the cleaner. And then, you know, Kenny does a typical babyface promo and, you know, I wasn't supposed to have this again. And here I am, but we got 50 days till Wembley. And next thing you know, well, Ospreay comes out, Bucks leave the ring because Ospreay asked them to, and they have an okay back and forth, where they're basically both like, where Ospreay's just kind of saying like, I'm not like, good for you. I'm very happy that you're a champ again. I look kind of like it was a typical babyface thing, but then being like, I'm not going to be second place. I'm going to take it from you. Great. You know, there was nothing there. Enter Kevin Knight. Knight comes out, you know, but he wants Ospreay to stay for whatever reason. He says, hey, good job, Kenny. Then he says, hey, I'm owed a championship shot. MJF offered me, said I have a championship shot if I help him, and that debt has to be paid. Omega very smartly says, why would I pay on MJF's debt? Like, that's the stupidest thing I've heard. And that's, I'm so glad he said that, because I would have been very annoyed if he goes, I might give you a shot because I think you got a lot of skill, a lot of talent, a lot of desire, but you're with Don Callis. Now, Kenny also did something I like, which is he acknowledged he's being a hypocrite in the sense that Kenny also was with Don Callis for a while and was champ. So he sees what the way Don sells himself to you, but hey, just because you think it's good doesn't mean it is. So he calls him Don's lapdog. You know, they go back and forth. And then Kevin Knight hits Kenny with the microphone, but then Darby Allin beats him up because he kind of came out of nowhere. But then Brian Cage and RPG Vice come out, followed by Hechicero, who's back apparently, and Jake Doyle. But then the Death Riders come out and help Omega and Ospreay. So it was kind of like what we were talking about, where the Death Riders, this is their good side tonight. They come and help the baby faces out. What'd you think of this back and forth?
It is, I mean, I'm glad they're pushing Kevin Knight into a main event title picture. I don't always love it when it's this whole champion versus champion. I feel like we've done a lot of, you know, insert name here, two belts. You know, I feel like we've used that a lot in professional wrestling lately. I think he needs to really work on his ring as TNT champion first. But I like that it's something different, at least. Someone different in the main event picture card for the title. the promo itself, like you said, I'm glad that Kenny made sense of it. I am finding myself getting a little sleepy when it comes to Kenny Omega promos. For whatever reason, they're very long-winded. I can do a lot of copywriting in my day-to-day job, and I just want to like edit and make it a little bit more succinct and, you know, not go on and on. And hey, promo is probably a reason why I have at least 7 more minutes on the overrun.
Yeah, this could have been much shorter, if not at all. I get you have to have your face-to-face with your champ and his biggest number one contender. And you want to, they set up their match with Kevin Knight for Revolution. I get all that. But I could have been quicker. Could have been a much more condensed segment. Jesse Ozark saying he's medium on Jet. Here's my problem with Kevin Knight. I love Kevin Knight. I think Kevin Knight's great. My problem with Kevin Knight has nothing to do with Kevin Knight. It's that they put him in the Don Callis family. That instantly cooled him as an individual right away.
You cooled the Jets?
You cooled the Jets.
Oh, man.
And you don't ever want to cool the Jets. They're very expensive to heat back up. You burn a lot of fuel. Like the night he came out after he betrayed, Darby Allin, when he came out to that Dynamite, he was so cool. He was awesome. He got the fans hating him in the right way. Right, like he started a little rough, but by the end of that promo, they loved to hate him. Like that was he had gotten it, and people were so high on him, and they instantly cooled him down by putting him in with the Don Callis family. It's like there's just, and I get that they're in a way, it seems like they're trying to pull him away from the Don Callis family a little bit by being like, can you do this on your own? Like, I get what they're trying to do, but there's just too many people in the Don Callis family, too many major stars that, like, the minute you join, it's like you're telling the same story. He's telling the same story as Kyle Fletcher, who's telling the same story as Okada, who was telling the same story as Andrade, who was telling, like, it's the same story with all of them because they're all in the Don Callis family and it's one story.
Mm. Yeah, I think it should have been I think we all agree we didn't like it when he was paired with the Don Callis family, so I thought that it should have been a much shorter arc.
Yeah, I thought he'd be out already. I legitimately thought they were going to do something where he used them to get the title and then,
yeah,
you know, he walks away and, you know, he's like, oh, thanks for helping me get the title and I'm out the door and you guys can deal with it on your own. But he clearly is in it for the long haul for some reason. And I don't know. I can't explain it. Why? Like what logic there is to put him in the Dalton Cowles family? I just it's been weeks and I still don't understand it. I am excited for Kenny. I am excited for Kenny versus Kevin. It's going to be an awesome match. It should be a foregone conclusion that Kenny wins because I definitely don't want I want Kenny and Ospreay at Wembley, so you don't want Kevin. Do you remember, you know what Revolution is feeling like to me? I know I don't know what they name it now. I think it's Elimination Chamber now at the WWE, but I always think of it like those in your house pay-per-views that used to be between the Rumble Mania. And I know it's Elimination Chamber now, but the in your house is always what you just knew it was a secondary, like, non-important thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we hosted In Your House 9 here in Omaha.
Oh, did you really? I will say I loved the set. It was unique. Mm-hmm. But this, to me, is... this is in your house level pay-per-view. Like, and not the talent or the probably the wrestling we'll get, but the importance. It very much feels like they're just throwing things on it to buy time for Wembley.
Yes. Agreed.
I don't know. That's just my humblest of humble opinions. Where can we go now? All right, let's go to we'll stay with the Don Callis family. Well, first we'll do this. There was a backstage interview with the conglomeration, Orange Cassidy, Roger Strong, Kyle O'Reilly, talking about who's going to challenge them for the trios, and then you have the demand come, and they're like, "We're not going to attack you." But then the Lethal Twist attacked the trios champions and they beat down the conglomeration. And he said something interesting because he's like, we told you that the demand wouldn't attack you. Well, the Lethal Twist aren't in the demand yet. So is he growing the size of the demand?
Well, yeah, every faction needs to be overgrown.
So I know what you're saying. There is a logic to this in the sense of, and not within why you're doing it as a book thing, but in the kayfabe world, that if I have a group in AEW and I start looking at the other groups, I'm thinking to myself, I got to add some members. We are outnumbered if we ever get in a fight. And so that's my one thing.
If any group were to add some people, I always wanted it to be the Hurt Syndicate to add, like,
yes,
two more members. Like, you should have thrown, like, Jason Agnew with them.
Mm-hmm. I don't even know where they've been.
They were at Brawl in the Park.
Were they? Oh. Because
there's, Minnesota.
That's right. I mean, they need some more people because, I mean, there is something to be said, though, of just the two of them kicking ass.
There is.
But they're a syndicate, and a syndicate usually indicates more than two people. The Hurt partnership.
Yeah.
So then we go on to, related to the Callis family, it's Andrade El Idolo versus Jake Doyle. And Andrade did an interview before he wrestled Jake Doyle, where he revealed that he had MJF's diamond ring. And it's how he got his catchphrase into that segment. Because it's like, how are you going to work in How You Know? And Renee goes, did you get that from Will Ospreay? He goes, How You Know? I liked that. It was a good way to work that in, because that's a hard catchphrase to work in.
I don't know if he can grab, I mean, he'll just throw in there no matter what.
Yeah, but I mean, like, hard to work in organically. And I appreciated that he seemed to get this one to fit. This was an actually very fun match where, you know, you had the powerhouse of Jake Doyle versus, I don't know what you'd call Andrade's style, because he's can fly when he needs to. He can hit when he needs. He's actually, it's matches like this that show kind of how big Andrade is, because he's not like, obviously Jake Doyle's bigger than him, but not like so much so that you're like, holy shit. Like, there is, this just goes to show that Andrade's kind of a beefy boy in the right way. Like, he's got muscle on him. He's kind of like after Ospreay put on him the weight and his muscle, where you're like, okay, now he can go against these heavyweights. But he, you know, he used a bit more speed and stuff to go against the much more powerful Jake Doyle. But as expected, Andrade won by pinfall. So now he has a shot at the AEW National Championship. What do you think of this match?
First of all, I love the fact that they're focusing a lot on Andrade now. They had the massive interview. They had the little vignette about him explaining what El Idolo meant. I don't remember the last time that Andrade has had this much focus and presentation, and it makes him feel now like a main event player. And the fact that he had the diamond ring, that's even better because of him and MJF's back and forth history, which I think that will hopefully set up a match maybe at All In, if MJF is back by then. The match itself, to your point, was very much like mini matching tonight was the whole, you know, big brooding strength person versus, you know, a little smaller person who's a little quicker. I felt like that was kind of the theme of the night. And I think four or five matches all had that theme. But otherwise, yeah, it was a fun match. Jake Doyle had a fun little choke slam spot where he had Andrade, you know, goozled for a while and took him over the rope, held on to it, and then slammed him on the apron. That is something I don't think I've seen yet. So that was fun. But yeah, my biggest takeaway was this is the most over I can remember Andrade being.
Oh boy, is he over. It is. It's actually crazy how over he is. Like, and so organically, just it started with a lot of fun wrestling and, you know, good times. And then he started going out into the crowd and the girls were kissing him. And he got more and more over with that. And it's kind of impressive. I'm noticing I'm freezing on screen. Am I freezing for you?
A little bit.
Joy. Especially after Kate just told us she couldn't join us. So that's wonderful. We'll try to get through this without my computer completely dying on me. Don't know why that's it. You're moving fine for me. As long as you can hear me, we're good.
Yep. Yeah.
People just get funny splash cuts at me.
That's the best way to see you.
I'm like doing funny movements to see which one it catches.
Yeah. You're like Max Headroom.
Yeah. So the next match we have is Aaron Solo and Nick Camerato. Yay, they're back versus Brodito. I mean, yeah, this is what we thought it would be, kind of squashy, and Brodito won. Any comments on the squashy match?
I'm glad friends of the factory are still wrestling.
Exactly.
No, I mean, it was a squash, and did it need to be on TV tonight with a 25-minute overrun? Probably not. All to set up a backstage run-in with Kyle Fletcher.
So I'm having fun with my camera.
I can tell.
Well, you know, when do I get if it's going to malfunction, I need to take advantage of it. I agree. So what you're pointing out is they run into Kyle Fletcher after the match. Like, he's doing an interview and they're running back from their match, and Brodito puts one of his wanted posters on Kyle Fletcher. Kyle Fletcher then goes out and has an incredible match versus Commander. I mean, Commander was giving as good as he was getting for portions of this match. I mean, Kyle got like something across his chest that looked gnarly. I don't know the name of it. It was incredible. I don't know. This is where I need Kate, because she knows all these dumb move names, but it was incredible. But Commander just was all over the place, flying around.
Are you talking about the one spot off the top rope?
Yes.
Where he springboards and then catching Fletcher and then like pretty much like almost like a Hurricanrana, but like.
Yes, that's the one. Yeah. My favorite single moment in the match was when Kyle kicked Commander outside the ring and Commander did like the flip over. Because the kick was, I love that spot. I'm a sucker for it every time, because it just makes the kick look insane. Kyle Fletcher won when he eventually hit the brainbuster, and he retained his international championship. This match was a springboard destroyer. Okay, thank you, Pieces. That's what it was. Right. Okay, that was incredible. So yeah, this was a great match. What did you think?
Yeah, this one for me could have gone there in 10 minutes, and I would have been perfectly fine with it. I hadn't seen Commander in a while. I know he was on, I think, Collision or something like that, but lately. But I can't do a whole lot of Commander matches because sometimes they get repetitive. But like when you don't see him, you know, after a couple months or a month or whatever, it makes the heart grow fonder for his style, especially with someone like Kyle Fletcher. It was match of the night by far.
Yeah, he works really well with certain other wrestlers. Like, he just blends really well together. Afterwards, Fletcher looks like he's going to take off Commander's mask. So Dekeshta comes in and makes the save. However, Okada comes in and makes the save on Dekeshta. But then Okada and Fletcher kind of have a moment over the international title. And then Bandido comes in and makes the save overall. To me, this post-match is what it is, except it sets up two segments afterwards. One is... it's just one segment afterwards. It's where Kyle Fletcher basically says, like, hey, Bandido, you want to fight me? Go for it. I plan on being the best TNT international champion of all time. Blah, blah. And Okada's just staring at him from behind. I loved that because he didn't say anything. He didn't do anything. It was just very subtle. Yeah, that's just, I loved that moment.
Yeah, it's weird to have him, you know, take the back seat and not even say anything.
Yeah, but it made it more meaningful to me. Not as I liked the subtleness of it. There's a Darby Allin quick interference of an Omega promo. We're saying like you have to beat Kevin Knight down in order to change him. I don't think there's anything important there.
The important thing was the Mox comes in and talks about, you know, some people don't change, or, you know, some people need to stop pretending who they are.
Yeah, which is indicating like what's happening. So then we have Brian Cage versus Darby Allin. These two work very well together, and they've done it in the past. Cage basically just tosses Darby Allin around, and then Darby Allin uses like the environment to his advantage. He wins with the pair of coffin drops. You knew he was going to win. This match is it's one of the more fun, but also one of the harder to believe because of the size difference. But they work so well together because Brian Cage just tosses him around.
Yeah. And kind of like when Darby faces, you know, Brody King, it's always fun to watch because it just looks like ragdolling. But, and it always looks like Darby is the human embodiment of Flubber, just bouncing around in the laboratory.
Great movie, Flubber. I don't think I've actually ever seen Flubber. So then we go to our main event. Divine Dominion, Lina Cross and Megan Bain, and Mercedes Moné versus Hyun, Maya World, and Willow Nightingale. They gave this more time than I thought they were going to, so I'm very happy about that. It was a pretty typical trios match, which is everyone kind of gets spots in at some point. You have a bunch of tag moments and not. Divine Dominion and Mercedes won because Mercedes hit the Moné Maker on Hyun, which she, of course, was going to take the pin in this. I think my biggest thing is I just like that they all had matching gear.
Yes, I also made that comment tonight. And, like, that's nice to see. I didn't have a lot of comments on the match. I mean, it was fine. It was nice to see a women's match main event. It's just not the style of match I would want as my main event. I thought this was, and then I kept thinking that something else would happen with the overrun, and I thought maybe this would help build toward the pay-per-view or something, but nothing. It's kind of like, you know, Mercedes wins and that's it. And I don't know, Ryan, you have way too much fun down there.
I'm loving this. It's the highlight of my night. I'm sorry. It has fully distracted me from all of this. You went into this match knowing the end. You knew that the Divine Dominion and Mercedes had to win this. They're tag champs, whatever. I think Hyun and Maya World are great tag team. I know Maya's kind of been going off on her own. I would still like to see them as a tag team because I think the women's division needs tag teams. Willow is incredible. It was a fun match.
one of the key pieces, you know, talking about the Brawling Birds, they had like a little promo, a little interview with Renee before this. I'm with you. I'm like, knowing that they've been having back and forth call outs with Divine Dominion, I'm surprised they didn't show up during the match or after the match or anything like that.
Yeah, they made them very British tonight. Am I the only one who picked up on that? That might have been one of the most British promos I've ever heard.
Well, they want to make sure you know their personas.
I'm not saying it was a bad thing, but it was just a very British thing. So with that, that was our show. Yes, I am kind of pushing us to the end because while it has been fun to mess with my camera, I am desperately assuming this is going to completely go with me at some point. So probably best to wrap up. Joe, when you're not here, where can you be found?
Oh, you can follow me on social media at _AsianJoe on X or Twitter, whatever you call it, or Instagram. That's pretty much it right now. My quest for cereal continues to find something interesting to review. But Ryan, hopefully you're having more luck reviewing things.
Well, I don't review much, but I am on all our socials at Mark Order Pod. My history YouTube at Here for History at _Here for History on X, Twitter, whatever. I don't have anything new out yet. Again, I will be soon. I'm trying to get a backlog, but there is some nothing bad, but just real life work and whatnot has monopolized my time in a way that I wasn't expecting. But they will be soon, you know, before the end of the summer. And then I'll have a bunch because I'll have done my backlog. So with that in mind, and my freezing, I'm going to put up the media assets. I'm going to go put up the outro. And I'm going to hit outro.
This concludes the Mark Order Podcast. We now return you to your regular